What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. Guess what, folks? We got a lot of headlines to get into on today's program. Stipe Miocic has finally spoken up about the John Jones fight. What did he say? I'm going to tell you that. Plus, the guy that beat Alex Pereira in kickboxing wants to fight Pereira in mixed martial arts. We got a whole lot to get to today, everybody. But let's begin with a highlight from the holiday weekend. Diaz versus Masvidal. What happened and where do we go from here, right? I mean, those are always the two things. There's really nothing else that matters. But where we go from here is the key to all of this, because Nate said that his ultimate goal is not going back to the UFC. He has not said, I want to be in the UFC, I want to go back, in about 4 years. And I do want you to notice that, particularly if you're a Diaz fan. If you're a Diaz fan and supporter, he has not said anything about himself and the UFC where he does not add to win the world championship. And young Nate Diaz actually didn't. I don't remember a time, as a matter of fact. It's a newer thing. And it could possibly just be a matter of speaking. It could be. But I don't think so. I think Nate, somewhere just within himself, found the importance of saying it. He found the importance of taking the risk, or having people tell you you can't do that, or having other people tell you, yeah, right on, right? Guys like me, yeah, right on. Let's go win that championship. And I think that came towards the backside of his career, where he's realizing, hey, I got in this when I was 19. I got this when I was 20. I did the ultimate. I've done absolutely everything. However, I got less fights less than I've already had, right? That's how I'll put it. I don't like the term backside of the career, but you know. You know when it's not just, I'm going to be doing this for forever in the foreseeable future. You know when it's one day at a time, one fight at a time. And I feel that there was something about that that created an urgency. And within that urgency, it really forced Nate into a spot that he had never been in, which is, what is it I want to do? You know, for a very meaningful period of time, Nate, who let us all in on this, right? Like, this isn't inside info I'm giving you. He let us all in on, I went out of my contract. But the next step wasn't fully formed. Why? That part wasn't fully formed. And he worked like hell. And he took risks and he did things other guys weren't willing to do to achieve that goal. That was a goal of his, and he worked just as hard to get out of that contract. Who, by the way, he did it unlike anybody else. First off, he publicly said it. He had his last fight. Everybody knew it was, and they still featured him. You can't give me one example where that's ever happened. I mean, just that. You cannot give me one example. And whether that ended up being Tony Ferguson or not, that is not the fight that Nate agreed to. That is not the fight that Nate trained for. Contrary to the way you may remember it, Nate Diaz never trained to fight Tony Ferguson. He trained and agreed to fight Cosmet Chimaev and ended up fighting Tony Ferguson. I'm just sharing with you that when Nate completed that and he took that microphone after telling everybody for years that this is what he wanted out of that contract, he was extremely respectful, and people thought that microphone was going to be a pipe bomb, and it was not. In fact, when that reality had come and that final bell, right, where the referee steps in, when that final moment came, it is now free. And in that moment, he said, I do want to go box. He talked about maybe he was getting his own thing going. They were going to do boxing and kickboxing and grappling. Remember, they started this thing, but we were given tons of information. And then goes right into the Jake Paul, which took on a life of its own. And while he was going through that process, and it was everything that he wanted it to be, like Nate lived the dream. You mean these other guys that, I want to go into boxing because they hear that there's money, and what they find out is that, first off, there's not, at least not for them. And it's a very dirty business, and it's very unorganized, right? They kind of find out this isn't what I thought. Well, but not all of them. Conor McGregor had a great experience, just for example. Well, so did Nate. Nate had an awesome experience, and he got a main event, and he got a feature, and he goes to Dallas, and it's a sold-out, man. All of us, we all go there, we're supporting him. I mean, it was everything that he wanted it to be. And then he realized he missed home. And he had said right there that this and working on this and mastering and all the things that go in are a preparation. It wasn't just to go to the UFC. It was to win the world championship. It was cool, man. It was cool when he said, I loved it. He wasn't talking about winning world championships when he was in there with Leon, just for example. It was a newer thing where he started to realize, hey, I'm fighting all these guys. I might as well beat these guys. Oh, by the way, if I'm fighting all world champions and the best guys out, I might as well fight the guy that's a current world champion, beat him and take the belt. Like, it was just cool. I was into it. So he goes out and he gets to jump on Masvidal and he says it again. UFC World Championship says Leon's name. He already fought him once. You can't tell me Nate's not good enough to fight. He already fought him once. So, but how are we going to get there? How are we going to get there? If we're going to go off precedence, how are we going to get a 39-year-old a new fresh contract? That's very different than you saying, hey, Chael, there's some 39-year-olds to fight. Now, I understand that. That are already under contract. We're now talking about getting a new contract, which is just a whole nother game. That's all I'm suggesting for you. It's a whole nother thing. Now, if we get that done, if we can get through that, you could main event him right now. He main evented Saturday, sold 18,000 tickets to boxing, which he's only done one other time. And these weren't boxing fans. These were people that wanted to come and see Nate box. These are Nate fans, and they wanted to come and see Nate. You could put on the back end of that whatever you wanted. It could be a hangout. It could be a sit down. It could have been a one-man show. Ariel Helwani. They were coming to see Nate. And I'm reminding you of that because that's unique. And when you have somebody that's unique, that's built and or created, and they've got themselves into this spot, they deserve to be treated uniquely. They've earned that. So I'm telling you, before anybody comes in the second floor of the UFC and just say, hey, we just don't do 39-year-olds. And that is going to be their very first response. Like, it wouldn't matter who you are offering them. We just don't. Well, as a policy in a broad stroke, I hear you on that. But we have a unique 39-year-old who just beat your BMF champion. In a sold-out venue with 18,000 plus, I mean, it's different. Can we just agree that it's different? So I don't know where that goes, and I don't know where that future goes, but I do know that Nate's attitude is different. And if you went and watched this fight, this is quite possibly the best Nate's looked. And if you're going to disagree with that, go ahead. But you're going to have to go back a long time. Here, let me just give you one example. You always hear about the cardio of the Diaz boys. You always hear about this, and Nick's the one that started that because Nick started doing these triathlons, and he started really making it known, and he was even into nutrition, and like soda pop was the worst thing in the world, and he kind of got some of these ideas. But then he went out, and he was just breaking guys in fights. He was putting a pressure on them, and he was breaking them. But because this stigma started with Nick, it then went to Nate, and you find out, well, little brother's doing the same thing. Nick's triathlons got advertised, but Nate's entering these same things. And she starts to get known for this cardio. And it was very accurate. If you wanted to go back and you want to look at Nate fights, I'll challenge you to tell me a fifth round that you've ever seen him lose. And the fifth round could be a third round, right? I'm talking about the last round of a fight. Go back and just tell me one that he lost. You have a really hard time. But you know what you're going to have just a hard time as? Telling me a first round that he won. And it could be against anybody, including George Masvidal, the first time they fought. Nate, for as hard as he will finish, is a oddly slow start. Like, it's, you look and go, what's the deal? Are you not warmed up yet? Like, in the back, do we need to get you on some wind sprint? Like, do we need to get this going? Or are you feeling a guy out? Maybe he's like Alex Pereira, where he needs that urgency. He needs to be a little bit behind. I'm only sharing for you, that is an accurate history of Nate, that he will finish harder than he starts. Not Saturday. I couldn't believe it. When Nate came out and walked George Masvidal down, walked him down, put a pressure on him, and put those... I remember, I'm turning to Steve. Brittany's dad, I'm literally turning and going, I have never seen him fight with this kind of aggression. Not in the first round. And it's a significant difference. And you can't do that in a 30-minute atmosphere. You can't do that in a 10-round fight of which you've never been in. You can't do that against a guy who already beat you. You can't do that unless you are truly driven and you paid a price in training. And Nate never spoke about that. He never said anything was harder. He never said anything was different. He never said he was more focused. He did say that the moment he was done with George Masvidal, he wanted a rematch. He did say that, but is that a selling feature? Is that something you say before the fight? Because that would make sense. Is that something you want to believe to be true? It's very different. Like you can't cause motivation. You just can't. It's where you have to run on discipline. But every now and then you get it, right? Every now and then boy, it looked like Nate was motivated. I have never seen him come out. I'm literally trying to think if that's like when I saw him fight when he was 20 or when he was 21. Have I ever seen him come out like that in the first round? And then he held it in round two and he held it in round three. It was such a great fight. And if I'm being at all reasonable or fair, it was a great fight because George Masvidal showed up and dug in. George Masvidal has some stuff going on I couldn't explain. I hope he does an interview and tell, but like he was out southpaw. I don't know why. Sean O'Malley's calling the fight and Sean notices it right away. But then Sean even says he won't be doing this for long. Like for whatever he's testing out as southpaw, you know that he's going to switch back. They all do. Of course he's going to switch back. He didn't. And I don't know why. Because it didn't look like there was an injury. As a matter of fact, I don't know of like a common injury where when that happens, you just switch to southpaw. In an MMA situation, you'll see guys change their stance because their front leg gets taken out with kicks. There is a time, but this is different. And he looked comfortable. And George was getting a massive amount of power with his lead shot to the body. Like he knew what he was doing from southpaw. It was great. George looked great. That's my point. As far as whatever you call this, influencer boxing, whatever you call that, whatever that is where you get two famous guys together and you have a box, whatever that is the best boxing match I've ever seen. That is one of, and just boxing as a whole, amateur, pro, heavyweight, stars, women, in any way you want to do it, that is one of the best boxing matches I've ever seen. And that would not be true had George Masvidal not showed up and fought to the bitter end trying to win. I wouldn't take, even in times I'm upset with Masvidal, his grit and heart away. It would not be true, and I would not attempt to take it from him. But I don't know if I have ever seen him fight with more grit. When I tell you that Nate's never done 10 rounds before, neither's George. It's an incredibly difficult thing to do, and it doesn't matter your level of condition. You got to know when to use it. And George didn't. George used it too early. He had to bite down, dig down, and show who he was to try to win that fight to the bitter end through the 10th round. Those boys get a lot of credit. The WBC, World Boxing Commission, I believe, I'm quite sure. President has come out. He has expelled Ryan Garcia. So Ryan Garcia had put out a tweet, and it was designed to be mean. Like there was nothing about it that had any intent other than be offensive, heavy on the N-word. So President WBC comes out and he says, I'm exercising my right, got authority in this matter, and I'm expelling him from anything WBC related. Now, unlike most suspensions that we'll see in sport, generally done in our sport by government, by a state athletic commission, and unlike the suspensions that we will see, which is a boiler plate statement followed and concluded with, until a hearing that is scheduled on such and such date. Like, this didn't have it. This was not a matter of Ryan Garcia could come forward and plead his case. I'm sure there are administrative options and abilities to do it, but it didn't state it. And that's not normal for us as unarmed combat athletes under the unified rules of the mixed martial arts. This is unusual. So what can Ryan do with the WBC? What is it that they've taken from him? To expel him from events which were not previously stated. Right? Like if Ryan Garcia had something coming up that he was going to monetize or leverage in any fashion, and that door is now closed without a hearing, it's a very interesting spot. And I like the rules more than you guys do. I've had people call me, Douglas Crosby told me one time, Chael, you have to move on. No one cares and no one's listening. This had to do with them taking the belt off Charles Oliveira for missing weight in Arizona against Justin Gaethje. I have read those rules. I have studied those inside and out. And I thought it would be very compelling if Charles Oliveira and company said, you're not taking my belt and you don't have the authority to do it. Now, I had to stop talking about it because no one was with me. And not on the fact that whether that could be done or not could be, they just didn't care. Take his belt, don't take his belt, put his belt up for grabs, bury his belt down in the ground. Nope, just nobody cared. So, I mean, I got to tell you, maybe I'm running around the flagpole again, but you've now suspended him. Does he have a hearing? Does he get to come forward? Maybe I'm sensitive to this right now. I'm currently hacked. Right this second. Like, I'm working on it right now and even think I've got a grasp on it, but then it's going to take X amount of time, in my case, 48 hours, before I can get control. So I'm just sharing for you. Garcia hasn't said he didn't do it. He's not saying he's hacked. He's one of the few people that put out something this absurd and then did not claim that he was hacked. But either way, it would seem like a good thing to ask him. It would just seem to me be like a really good thing to ask him if you're going to expel him from something that he previously has booked and has a plan to monetize and or leverage. If he doesn't, then he likely doesn't have a case anyway. But where were you last week? Where were you the week before that? I mean, I would just want to know that question. When you come out and you try to take the high-handed approach, if you want to expel Ryan Garcia because it's the right thing to do, you would have a mechanism in place. I don't know what it would be of the WBC. It's not a real organization, but they think that they're real and they would think that they have a mechanism in place. It could be done possibly online. Put a check next to his name. I'm making that up. I don't know. Perhaps they have to give notice. Like a landlord that is unsatisfied with the tenant's lease, you must give notice in a certain way. But instead of doing those things, they did it in the form of a press release publicly. So it wasn't really about Ryan Garcia. It was about an attempt to try to look high-handed. I don't hate that. I see that every single day. I'm just wondering in this particular case, where were you last week? Because I know where Ryan was. He was being suspended by the New York State Athletic Commission for having a performance-enhancing drug known as a steroid in his system. Where was the WBC the month before that? Because I know where Ryan was. He was working out an amendment with Devin Haney for not abiding to the agreement and making the weight class that was suggested. Where was the WBC before that? Because I know where Ryan was. He was on the same platform that you've now suspended him for, talking other crazy stuff, throwing out every single possible word that you could, including accusations against other people, none of which I'm excluding you yourself and your organization of the WBC. So it just becomes an interesting question of why now? And to my point that you're very unlikely to have any kind of a legal consequence if he was not on the docket that you're now removing him for, you're very unlikely to have a legal consequence. The same thing could be said in reverse, which is what authority do you have over social media by an adult who you did not adjudicate to find out if he's even the ones that pressed the buttons? The media went and labeled him crazy 2 months ago. The very media then came back, oh my God, you fooled us all. You're wow. All because he won. You had a guy who had demonstrated himself in such a way that our media band together and deemed that he was crazy and that somebody should step in and do something, whether that was the New York Commission or the WBC itself, both of which said, we don't have authority. First off, we're not even in a position to agree with you that he in fact is crazy, for one. And two, we don't have the authority to do anything about it. So you then come on the backside, he gets a victory. And because he had the victory, he then was not crazy. That was one of the most amazing things that I've witnessed, by the way. Like Ryan Garcia being able to outbox Devin Haney does not mean that there wasn't something peculiar or out of the ordinary going on. Like if Ryan Garcia would have lost that fight to Haney, they could have gone all 12 rounds. It could have been razor thin. It could have been a split decision. It would not make a bit of difference. Had he lost the fight, he would have been deemed crazy and his social media would have been the evidence and everybody would have soaked it up. Because he had an ability to outbox Devin Haney, he therefore was found by you, the media, to be sane. Until today. At which time, social media that has not been denied put out something that was designed to offend, that was heavy on the N-word, and the WBC president has stepped forward to suspend, expel, rather, an even stronger term. Not prior to, and not until we adjourn, not for an adjudication of any kind, at least that was stated. It was done as a public display that we shall not tolerate this. That very organization tolerated a breach of contract, tolerated an accusation that, much like the tweet, has not been denied. A negative assay, not just for a performance enhancer, for an anabolic steroid. They tolerated all of that. And they were asked and questioned. They chose to not make comment. And if they would do it off the record, they said, we don't have the authority. But today, not only did they have the authority, they even had the emails necessary to get this into the public hands, not as a way of looking out for Garcia, not to offer Garcia support, not to say that we are concerned. We now have a failed drug test, whether that's for an anabolic or not. It's a failed drug test, which would open an avenue for some kind of an adult to come in the room and attempt to get help and or care. None of which were done. But they did publicly suspend, or rather expel. My only question is, why now? It's official. We are in fall. Guys, it is the busiest and best time of the year for team sports and sports fans. Look, you got the NFL. You got college football. You got NHL and MLB postseason. Don't be left out of the season by trying to run your e-commerce business all on your own. Let me introduce you to the perfect teammate, Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret that with ShopPay, you can boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts are going abandoned and you're going to get more sales. Businesses that sell more simply sell on Shopify. We use Shopify over here at Bad Guy Inc. All of our merchandise, and it will not disappoint you. I want you to upgrade your business. I want you to sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/Chael. That's Shopify.com/Chael, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Chael to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com /Chael. Stipe Miocic did an interview and he was explaining. He was explaining and he was defending. I didn't think it was fair. I didn't think it was fair the position Stipe got put in. Stipe was speaking to people who have said that he's holding up the division. I don't know how. And this isn't because I like Stipe. By the way, like, let me just look at this objectively. I don't know how. Stipe was ready to fight. He was ready to fight in November of last year at Madison Square Garden. John Jones got hurt. Now, if you'll remember, they held an interim championship fight. Sergey Pavlich was the backup fighter when it was John Jones and Stipe. So it would seem to you that Stipe would go in against Pavlich. And then if we could do an interim title, like that's a conversation that'll have to happen. But it turned out it did happen. And it was for an interim title. So it looks like it would be Stipe versus Pavlich. Now, I'm backing up to November of last year. It was Dana that came out and said we didn't even offer it to him. And I asked him why. And Dana said, that's disrespectful. While Sergey Pavlich looks red hot, he's got a beautiful record and people are talking about him, Stipe is the most successful heavyweight fighter we have ever had, who is getting ready to go against possibly the best fighter we have ever had at the Mecca for the strap. I'm going to change all of those ingredients. I'm going to change everything and not even put up the same belt that he, I'm going to hold it and we're going to go through with what we told our most successful heavyweight ever. Great. That made a lot of sense. But if it didn't, if you had a problem with it, that was the time to speak. And nobody did. The media in the room accepted it. And I'm only telling you that because now here we are later and there's a new guy that's emerged. It wasn't even the guy that night who was Sergey Pavlich. There's a new guy. His name's Tom Aspinall. But on top of Tom Aspinall, there is now a real interesting, right? And whoever comes in last always has the advantage over the guy that was long. So now you got the new fresh face in town, which is Alex Pereira, who, by the way, is not even in the division. So it's kind of this weird talk amongst fans. But because of that, before we can get to who it's going to be between Tom, who, by the way, has to deal with Blades first. Weird conversation we're even having. Or if we can get Pierre in there, who, by the way, is not even in the division. We have to get the business done with Stipe. And therefore, Stipe is the one holding things up. And I'm like, man, I could barely follow that. I could barely follow that to even explain to you guys. So I don't want that to be there. And if you ever run into Stipe, like, I imagine you would look at him and you're intimidated, right? Heavyweight champion of the world. But if you ever see him, like, if you're somewhere in Vegas, you go, hey, that guy looks like Stipe. I wonder if it is. Go say hi. You won't regret that you did. He's extremely approachable. And then ask him something you want to ask him. And you want to know who did that over the weekend in Vegas? My father-in-law, Steve, walked right up to him. Had never met him before. Introduced himself. Asked Stipe a couple of questions. Stipe didn't know he was like my father-in-law or anything. It was nothing like that. It was a guy that had come up and spoke to him. Well, that's what Stipe was down there for. He was down there to speak to people. One of the things that Steve asked him is, what are you weighing? And I am very interested in that myself. I told you that when I reached out to Stipe, which is his wife, she had shared this with me, but I'm going back, guys, 3 years. Don't forget where we left off. Stipe did not leave the octagon the last time with a plan to fight John Jones. Stipe lost his title. Stipe's very last fight. He lost his title to Francis Ngannou. Now, while Francis never defended that title, is that accurate? No, it's not, is it? He did defend it against Surreal. While Francis never defended that title against Stipe, it was believed that that's where they were going. And it was believed they were going in that direction because now you have a true trilogy fight. Stipe won one. Francis won one. But one thing that was very meaningful is the night Stipe beat Francis, he weighed 246 pounds. You fast forward the tape all those years later, Stipe weighed in at 233 pounds. I couldn't figure it out myself. It's one of the reasons that I went to his wife in the first place. Like, hey, what's going on? You know, and you hear a story about these guys. Oh, I got on this new diet. Right? Yeah, I'm doing these new greens. All right. Yeah, I've turned vegan. Whatever it might be, when a guy's physiology changes to that degree, there's an explanation. Stipe didn't have one. And believe me, Stipe 1 would have told you guys through the media, but she would have told me. Even if she swore me to secret, she would have told me. No, it was nothing like that. He didn't change anything. His weight had just come off. Like, he's working so hard, and then, you know, apparently wasn't putting enough calories in. Like, it wasn't even a thought. And they didn't care. They didn't mind. He was plenty strong. Conditioning was good. They didn't really think much of it. But when it's done, you don't get the result that you want. You start to turn to the numbers and go, is there anything here that jumps off the page? And that was what jumped off the page. Stipe felt like, man, I wasn't enough man. I felt him out there. I never thought I was too small. And then I got in there with Francis. And very typically, our heavyweights, 233 would be a small heavyweight champion. But he's still in the ballpark. Mike Tyson was 220, even if that's boxing. Muhammad Ali was 198. Cain Velasquez, a smaller heavyweight, 240. Randy Couture, smaller heavyweight, 228. I mean, Fedor Emelianenko, you're not 240. You're right. Stipe's right in there. But then sometimes you have that different kind of guy. You have a Tyson Fury that's barely making the weight limit. You have a Brock Lesnar. You have a Francis Ngannou. So Stipe said, here's what I'm going to do. I know I'm getting the third fight. That's what makes sense with a trilogy. I got to put some size on. All right, somewhere along that journey, Francis exits stage left. John Jones emerges. And one of the things with John Jones, in fact, the entire thing with John Jones, for going up to heavyweight, is he will be spotting the opponent an advantage. He's going to spot him right off the bat. And you got to fill in the blank, right? I mean, it goes all the way up to 265. In some jurisdictions, it's 285. Versus what John's going to be able to get himself up to. And when he went out against Surreal Gon, that narrative just didn't exist. They were only separated by a few pounds. And I do like the idea. I think that John's right. You are giving the guy an advantage. And for us to have that storyline and or enjoy it in any kind of way, we've got to be able to see it. So if John gets on that scale around that 232, 234, and Stipe gets on there around that 255, it's very interesting. At any rate, my father-in-law went up and said, what are you weighing? And the answer, if you see Stipe, looks great, right? Weight all isn't the same. Got to put on 20 pounds. Sometimes that's terrible news. But this is very different. This was a guy that was already there. He'd lost the weight. Now he's trying to put it back on. And 251 was the answer. 251 pounds. But don't forget, it's not a situation where you go into training camp and the weight comes off. That can most certainly happen. But Stipe's been ready. Right? He had to get ready. He didn't quite know when John was going to come back. Now it looks as though we've got an answer. A specific answer. November. This year, Madison Square Garden, main event, heavyweight championship. Everything that we had planned last year, we're just going to do it 1 year later, all the way down to the month. And it would seem to me, right, you talk about advantages. And people are very quick to talk about John is the greatest. That's true. But the most decorated heavyweight, and decorated and greatest are two different conversations, but you see where they're pretty close. That's Stipe. And that's quantifiable. And it would seem to me that Stipe has had an advantage because John's injury was very real. Like, there's not a situation where he could go in and be active and be busy, which is a chance for him to digress and Stipe to suppress. So, surpass. So let's just see where that goes. We've got a date. We got a fight. Everybody's healthy. Everything's coming around. Let's leave this other stuff out because it's weird and it's not true. It just simply isn't true. And while Stipe is an underdog, if he's to beat John, not only will what you're saying now, and I'm telling you it's not true, it will then be proven. You will then look like a fool, right? Like Stipe holding up the video, all these things that you're saying to bring in this new guy or to bring in this. If Stipe beats him, it's now proven that he didn't hold it up. It's now proven that that was the right fight. And I'm just sharing for you, before you get lost in any of that, this is a time of celebration. If you're a fight fan, if you like the perennial division, which is the heavyweights, this is a good news day. Stipe's 251. He's healthy. John Jones is healthy. He's back in training. The organization's got him a date. November this year, MSG. The positive time. So don't get lost in the message. Piera and Anthony Joshua. Did you guys see this? Just an exchange on the kids used to call Twitter. And it was very friendly. But Anthony Joshua tipped his hat that he's been watching Piera and that he's impressed with him. And for some reason, we can't get around the idea of an MMA fighter going and boxing. Like, it's just, it's one of these things. And it's never been tempted the other way where the boxer comes in and, you know, he does MMA, but fair enough. I will admit for you, Piera would be different. As a striker who added skills to come to MMA, added to the legal requirements, to then reduce them is somewhat interesting. Now, Piera responded, though, to Joshua. And Piera said, I appreciate that you think so. I'm 37 years old. I can't go make a career of it. So what do you recommend I do? Now, I really like that for so many reasons. But number one is, like, that's how a real person would talk. That's how a real person who is grounded in reality, which very few guys make their way to television, still have that awareness, and you're having a very different conversation based on what a guy's goals are. Like, when you get these guys that come over, I love boxing and I want to box, and it's boxing, 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 is BS, BS, BS. They're just looking for the money, and that's okay. I don't know that we have a problem with it. What I'm sharing with you is the way you would approach that are two very different things. I came from a wrestling background. It's Olympic year. The games are going to start at the end of the month. But it is the entire reason that you wrestle. You have a hope or a dream. Whether you make it there or you pursue that full time, but your entire reason, right? Just like football. Just like the Super Bowl or even the Super Bowl MVP, just like that, is the entire reason you start playing football in the first place. And then how far towards that you get is a different conversation. But because that's what I come from, and that is so coveted for us, perhaps I don't relate and understand to other sports that don't view it the same way. And I would just start with boxing, right there. When you have a guy and you see and you go, man, that's a talent. That guy could be world champion. Let's get that guy in there with Floyd Mayweather. Like, wow, a guy that's never done it before, huh? He, you believe, could beat your best to have ever done it, really. And then you get it tested where a guy 0-0 goes almost 30 minutes with a guy 50-0. Or you, most amazing sporting event I've ever witnessed, is Francis Ngannou, 0-0, getting a split decision after 30 minutes with Tyson Fury, right? It's one of these interesting things where it does make you wonder, right? Because, see, when you see that, you now do have proof that the right guy that knows what he's looking at can identify somebody from the MMA world who could go over and do really great things. I mean, we wondered this as grapplers with St. Pierre. How far could he go? Could he win Abu Dhabi? He would be a threat. Could he win Abu Dhabi? Right? It's one of these things where every now and then they do come along. I would like to have the answer, and I don't understand. As a guy who values the Olympics so much, I can't understand how a guy like Piera, if you truly are that good, if it really is a question to the point that Anthony Joshua is weighing in and supporting it. Anthony Joshua knows what he's looking at. Can we agree? I can't understand how it's Olympic year. Why didn't you go make the team? Why didn't you make the team? Is it because you're not sure you could make the team? And the guys trying in boxing are kids? They're 16, they're 19, they're 22 at the most. you as a grown man do not want to go and test that against a senior in high school because it can throw everything. Because that's why I believe they don't go to make the team. That's what I personally believe. But I could be wrong. Maybe they just don't value it. Basketball players don't value it. Like, maybe there's just not an approach on it that is the same. My uncle won an Olympic championship in basketball. He has talked about it however many times I have brought it up, and not one single more. And isn't overly proud of it when I do bring it. Like, I'm just sharing with you, it was viewed differently, and they weren't. He doesn't have a huge honor and pride in that. So when Pierre is asking Anthony Joshua, like, it's a very different conversation. What is it you want to do? When I see Connor go out there and beat up Floyd, I'm thinking, okay, Connor could have made the Irish Olympic team. Could have he got a medal? Could have he won the gold medal? And to me, those things are very interesting. And there's only one guy that I know of that ever tested that because he truly loved it. He truly loved it. He truly wanted to pursue it. And it was Little Nog. Of all the things that Little Nog has done, the one that I look at and I appreciate the most is he showed that he is a true competitor. He went through the amateur process. He won the Brazilian Nationals. Are you guys aware of this? I believe this was 2012 when the Olympics were in Rio. I believe it was for that one. He not only won the Nationals, he made it to the final box-off to make the team. He was an alternate. He ended up losing that, and then another guy went. He was that close. But see, now you have a guy that has now proven it. One, he's proven that he loves it, that he's genuinely interested. And that's the one thing that I always miss. And any one of them could do it. And if there's another reason, I'm open to hearing it. I just don't know what it is. When I look at it, I come to the assertion, one of two things. One, you don't truly love it. If you did, you would go to the highest level that nobody can stop you. See, that's why the Olympics are so important in boxing. The whole thing is BS. If Francis can walk in 0-0 and get a world title fight, the whole thing is BS. But then the fact that he might have been the best in the world, one licensed judge put his name that he won the fight. You see the level of ridiculousness you're working with. But the one place that you have where that is not true, there is no promoters, there is no money, there is no big push. It is straight line, your skills versus the next guy in a bracket is the Olympics. And when these guys want to talk about how great they are, how dangerous, I could go over to boxing, I could do this, that, and the other, you don't believe that. If you did, you would have gone to make the Olympic team. Now, if there's a different reason, I'm open to it, right? I'm confined like anybody to the restraints of my own creativity and imagination. Perhaps there's a different reason that you don't go and do that. But I will see guys that are saying they want to box. Man, they're dying to box. Oh, it's their dream to box, but they're under contract with the UFC. Just for example, oh, I'm under contract. I can't do it. Yeah, you wouldn't need to ask any permission. You wouldn't even need to have a conversation to go and try to make the Olympic team. That is a 100% federal law, not that they would dispute with it anyway. I'm just letting you know. If you truly love boxing, that's truly your thing. There's nothing that would stop you. And I wouldn't sit an Olympics out. If I was the best right now in any sport, I'm going. And I do think that Francis can make the team. After I saw what he did with Tyson Fury, I can't imagine that there's a guy. And I'm assuming the passport that Francis is holding, right? And so is from Cameroon. So I'm just assuming, man, there ain't nobody in Cameroon that could beat this guy. What an incredible opportunity to have a fun experience to prove yourself. And Francis won the gold medal, wouldn't he? What medal do you think Connor would get? I just think those things are interesting. And what about Pierre? You're going to tell me what a great striker is? You're going to tell me that he's the best? Well, Brazil sent in a representative at that weight in exactly 28 days, and it's not him. So is he unlike me? Did he just sit an Olympics out, or the reality is he couldn't make the team? If he couldn't make the team, and a senior in high school did, it would seem as though we don't really need to go over to boxing and find the right opponent if we're looking for actual competitiveness. So I find it to be an interesting topic. What do we want to do and who do we want to do it with? And that always seems to be the problem. Like when Connor went over and made $100 million, which by the way, he didn't. But there's your story. There's a misunderstanding that I can too. Without understanding, one, I'm not Connor, and two, I don't have the opponent that is Floyd. Now you're just two guys that are boxing. Right, it would be similar as to finding out Carrie Underwood made $10 million to sing a song, and then you went down to the karaoke bar and you couldn't figure out why it wasn't the same thing. You just can't figure it out. Sit around, you're thinking on it. It's like, well, there's a chance that you're a little bit stupid. And moreover, who would the opponent be? Like if you're asking Anthony Joshua, and I must tell you, I don't know Anthony Joshua, but I know of him. And never have I personally seen him do anything for anybody else. I'm not turning on him, by the way. I'm just being real fair with you guys. I've never seen Joshua do something for somebody else, let alone publicly. He does it for himself. And I believe that is the misunderstanding that Piera had. Piera is a champion of the world. Piera is talking about going heavyweight. Piera has very scary hands. I believe Anthony Joshua was starting a conversation about challenging Alex Piera. I believe the opponent that Joshua had in mind, for the connections that Joshua has for a big paycheck like he just got fighting one MMA guy already, I believe Joshua was trying to skin the same cat two times, and Piera didn't understand that. And I don't think they'll go back to it. I think Joshua's going to see the response and alter and go, okay, I'm going to be a mentor and I'm going to help this guy and I'm going to be, but I think Alex misunderstood. I think the opponent that AJ had in mind was AJ.
Excellent.
Oh, that's an incredible spin I took. That was 11 wasted minutes and we got to that finish. AJ challenged Alex Piera.
8 seconds.
Yeah, make no mistake. AJ challenged Alex Piera. That is what happened there. Ring a bell? I'd be surprised. I'll be impressed if it does. Artem Bakhatov, right? Okay. So, Artem Bakhatov is the last kickboxer to defeat Alex Piera in kickboxing. Okay? He's coming over to MMA himself. Saw what can happen, right? You got all these MMA guys, they want to go to boxing. We got the kickboxer guys that apparently now want to come to MMA. It's like nobody can be happy, right? Every actor wants to be an athlete. Every athlete wants to be an actor. All right. So I want to just break this down real fast. Artem did an interview, and I can't tell you that he did anything wrong. And in fact, he got my interest. He taught me something I did not know, which is who he is, and he beat Piera. He's coming over to MMA, and he's got to win over Piera. I can't deny that story worked, because here I am repeating it. I learned something, I'm bringing it to you. Not to mention, we know that works. That's the exact formula that Piera did when he came over. The exact formula. I beat Izzy. I beat your champion. I'm now coming to this sport. I beat him over here. Why would I not beat him in this one as well? We're both dominant. We're both heavy in this. We're both being in the room working on our grappling. We didn't do it in official competitions. Like everything kind of seems to add up at least enough for a story. But we didn't accept that as fans, did we, guys? I mean, we didn't accept it to the extent that when Izzy and Piera went at it, regardless of what had happened time and time and time again in their career, we had Izzy as a 2.5-to-1 favorite. Do you guys remember that? Because we did. In fact, when he did it again, the one that Izzy got right, Izzy was a 2.5-1 favorite. We didn't accept anything that we had seen. And I'm only sharing with you, like, if Artem's going to copy a blueprint, I get it. But I want to make a suggestion for you. And even though it worked out for Piera, there was a little bit more to that. Like, that wasn't just a by the book. you know, hey, 90% of the time this works, let's go do it. It was an anomaly. It was a one-off. It doesn't happen without Sean Strickland. But moreover, it doesn't happen without Izzy. Izzy made that fight. If you'll recall, and you may not remember it this way, but it's exactly what happened. Izzy cut Joe Rogan off. And Izzy always lines up his next fight. Nobody has steered their own career. Nobody like Israel Adesanya. And he does it so well that he gets his way. He does something so good from a marketing standpoint, you can't unfry the egg. It would be silly to not just go forward with it. But I'm telling you that because why you think that Pierre might have come over here and it was a splash and he's chasing Izzy and he had this past with him and that is why he got to him so fast, I'm just sharing with you, you're remembering it wrong. And if Artem, I believe, right? Because here's the mess. You don't want to have the secret sauce to beat a guy. And that's all that you got. I can take out your champion. It can't be because even if it's true, you can't get to him. You can't just have the secret answer to beat him. It's got to be, I am the best in the world. Make no exception, including the guy that's putting everybody to sleep. Not only did he not put me to sleep, it's a thing. And I feel that the best way to do that is to join him. I feel that instead of Artem coming in, doing what makes the most sense to him, which is create heat, create a story. I want to get to Piera. I'm going to start calling out Piera right away, but I'm going to be different than everybody else. I got this path. Oh, and by the way, it was successful. Believe me, I understand it. I'm just here to share with you. Kickboxing does not come over with enough of an audience. If you meet a kickboxing fan, I don't know if you really did. In all fairness, I don't know if you really did. Like a fan has got to be, what's your favorite sport? My favorite sport is kickboxing. I've never met that guy, and I run in these kind of circles. I never in my life, hey, what's your favorite sport? My favorite sport is kickboxing. Oh, is that right? Well, what do you know about it? Where have you seen it? It really doesn't work that way. And I'm not bagging on kickboxing. I came from wrestling. We don't do it either. We'll get a wrestler that comes over into MMA. And it used to be, man, we had our top guys. We could get them signed because there was a belief that's going to bring an entire market with them. It just never worked that way. And it doesn't work that way to the extent that Alex Pereira was a 2.5-1 underdog against Izzy. Right, if you had this big kickboxing world with a big fire, they've already seen it once, twice, three times. They're going to know which way to lay the spread. It wasn't that way. So I'm only suggesting for you that Artem come in different and he come in with Pereira. We are taking over. He associates himself with Pereira. We kickboxers, we've always been the hardest sport. Why you think we're not in the junior highs and the high schools? Why do you think you can't get a college scholarship in kickboxing? Man, it's too hard. You can't fill a team. We got very dangerous skills. Why do you think you don't see this down at your local YMCA? What do you think they're doing boxing and jiu-jitsu instead? Yeah, we're too dangerous. The things I know, man, is too dangerous. And I think he just associate himself with Alex Pereira. Might be a better approach. Because if you do create the idea that you've got the magic answer to deal with Pereira, who is a major draw, it's like real simple how we're going to handle you. First off, we're going to make you prove your way before you ever get a shot in the organization, which you're probably thinking in your mind is going to be the opposite. I'm going to get fast-tracked. I've got to win over Pereira. They're going to want me. Make sure you understand that's pretend. Okay? We want the guy that's going to sell the most tickets. Do you truly believe that that's you? Okay, because if it's not, then we actually don't want you. And if you are truly a big threat with no fans, you're the most dangerous thing in the world for a promoter. If you're a really big threat, and you got a whole bunch of fans, we're in a whole different conversation. And that is never going to be said to you publicly. I'm handing that to you right now. But that gets missed very often. Where a guy will try to convince you, I can beat him, I can beat him, I can beat him. Okay, the biggest problem you're going to have is if I believe you. If I believe you, who I can't pronounce last name, is going to take down my top star. We now have a problem. So I just believe that kickboxing as a whole has a massive opportunity right now. And if you follow the history of kickboxing, even though it's small, there's never been a time like now. It was a shock when Maurice Smith took over the world, and it didn't happen again all the way until Holly Holm. Are you aware of that? So Holly comes in, but it was different. It was a different division. It was really small. We don't quite know. Like, hers wasn't fully accepted. And then in comes Izzy. And then in comes Pierre. And all of a sudden you go, wait a minute. What's going on here? Is this a new breed of kickboxing? Is there a new way of training? How is it that these guys and this one style is being so wildly effective? Not just making waves or a pain in the ass to deal with. World champions. Dominant world champion. Izzy doesn't just come in and become the champion of the division. He starts to get recognized as the greatest middleweight there'd ever been. Now Pierre is in this conversation for the greatest fighter. I mean, do you see the difference? Do you see where, instead of trying to conquer as a way, to divide as a way to conquer, perhaps the better opportunity is us. We are doing this. We will run through everybody. It's a suggestion. It's a thought. The number one message you must understand is if you can truly beat this guy, if that is the true reality, and you don't have any fans, no matter what you're told, I'm going to tell you the truth right now. You will never be given that opportunity. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And to all of you who sent me messages about getting into the UFC Hall of Fame, I really appreciate that and your support. And I hope that you keep tuning in to the podcast every week. Speaking of which, I'm going to be back for more on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.